The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It is 4 minutes past nine on this Thursday. It's the 4th of June 2026. Great to have you on board for another packed 2 hours. And in the first hour, we'll see how it goes. We're going to be talking after we've had a couple of days to digest it, the updated IS465 guidance and what it might mean for the defective concrete block. What it might mean for the defective concrete block scheme or for those of you affected by it. So we have two guests. We're going to talk that through. But maybe it's an opportunity for you who might have realised, you know, there's people realising every day that their house is defective and are having to face up to the reality of potentially going on to the scheme. So any questions in relation to it at all, or the revised guidance, please get in touch with us right now. We'll try and get as many answers for you as possible whilst also breaking down what the practical implications possibly could be with this updated guidance. 0866 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and the text number, 0866 60 25000. Or give us a call to 0749125000. Or email comments at highlandradio.com. I'm going to go through the papers in a moment, but there's something going on here. And maybe I'm paranoid, or maybe not paranoid, but maybe I think too much, or maybe I don't. But it's this whole conversation about whether or not Donegal versus Cork is going to be on the telly. We know it's not. Now, thankfully, the one thing you can rely on is that we will have all the build-up, all the key voices, full match commentary, the best analysis on the planet on Highland Radio. So you will be able to listen to every Donegal game, as always, here on Highland Radio. But I just really think it's quite interesting that maybe it's possible you out there, you're being manipulated. And I can sort of see it on this programme because I've seen the shift in various conversations about GEA coverage. So I put a few words down because it was annoying me to such an extent. Now, maybe you think I'm talking nonsense. Maybe you think I'm right. But if you want to know how to manage public anger, I could argue that you look no further than the GEA's broadcasting strategy for this weekend's All-Ireland series. Take a look at the schedule. Donegal versus Cork in Ballybofey. It's a massive high-stake championship fixture. Where can you watch it? Nowhere. It's completely blacked out. No RTE, not even on GEA Plus streaming service. Kildare versus Kerry suffers the exact same fate. Another big game. And on Sunday, Cavan versus Dublin. The reigning All-Ireland champions is also completely dark. Well, they're not the reigning All-Ireland champions, but it's also completely dark. Sorry, very successful in the All-Ireland Championship. So for the last two seasons, the biggest row, I would argue, in Irish sport was the paywall. Fans were furious. The big games, major games, were locked behind a subscription barrier. But look at what is happening now. By pulling, arguably, these blockbusters off the airwaves entirely, the GEA has subtly shifted the baseline of your outrage. We're not complaining about €15 to stream a match anymore. Instead, we're begging for the right to do so. If you completely starve a passionate fan base of access, you change the nature then of the conversation. The next time the GEA expands its subscription package, fans won't meet it with a protest. They'll meet it with relief. Finally, I can watch all of the games. The paywall ceases to be the villain. It becomes the saviour of GEA. So are we being managed here, I ask you? Are we being conditioned to accept less so that when we're eventually asked to pay more, we do so with a smile? Because I believe that's what's happening. Because now what you have is GEA Plus is owned by the GEA. They've picked three big games there not to televise. They say it's because they want more people to go to matches. But seriously, do you think there was ever going to be a situation whereby there'd be a spare seat in McCool Park, for an example? And I noticed, and I've seen some people commenting on social media today saying it's an absolute disgrace that the game's not being televised. Not that it's not being televised in RT, that it's not being televised at all. And some of these same accounts last year or the year before were saying it's disgraceful. It's disgraceful that you have to pay to watch Donegal now. Hey, give us the option to pay for Donegal. We'll pay it, no problem. So there's a bit of potential trickery going on there. What do you think? 086 60 25000. Are we that easy to manipulate? We go from crying about paying for a game to crying about it not being on at all. Let me know. The Tyrconnell Tribune, over 20 years after the Lough Swilly Preservation Group won their battle to stop further cultivation of oyster beds near Rye Bridge, the group is now fighting to ensure the decision of the Aquaculture Appeals Board in 2005 is upheld. Hazel Russell, who has been a lead campaigner for the preservation of Lough Swilly, confirmed she's made a Freedom of Information request to the Department of Agriculture this week, seeking clarity and information because the official silence raises serious concerns. She said that those who had lodged objections to the new developments had only received an automated response and they are not aware that any human has yet seen their submissions. She said the lack of information is a matter of concern, especially since Lough Swilly is designated as a special protection area and a special area of conservation. And in such circumstances, a 750-acre development would be contrary to the EU protection status and all it embraces. Detailed coverage on the front of it inside that paper today. The Donegal News, for many families, the sums do not add up, with households across the county continuing to face mounting financial pressure. There was expected to be a large attendance at a public meeting on the cost of living crisis in Letterkenny last night. Of course, the paper went to press prior to that meeting. The meeting was one of a series being held by Sinn Féin in communities nationwide as part of a campaign calling on the government to introduce an emergency cost of living package. Speaking to the Donegal News ahead of the event, the party's finance spokesperson, Pierce Doherty, said families and individuals can't afford to wait until Budget 2027 for support. The Derry News this morning reports that 26 risks identified by Western Trust at Altnagalvin. The Western Health and Social Care Trust currently has 26 identified risks on its corporate risk register, including obstetrics and gynaecology consultant workforce at Altnagalvin. According to the Corporate Risk Register and Assurances Framework briefing note, prepared for the Trust Board meeting on May 7th, 26th, the 20 risks were approved at the Trust Board meeting of March 5th, 2026. On to the Nationals. Now, the Irish Times. Most parents who use childcare will benefit from a new maximum cap on fees of €183.70 a week for 46 hours, the Minister for Children has said. Now, in fairness, we were listening a little earlier on about calls for specific cost of living packages, etc. I'm sure the government would argue here's a perfect example of them addressing the cost of living. Norma Foley yesterday announced the new maximum fee caps, which had been flagged as part, or at the time, sorry, of Budget 2026. A parent who sends their child for 45 hours of childcare a week, which translates to care between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. Monday to Friday, will see their costs drop from a maximum of €198 a week to €183.70 from September. But even under the most generous fee caps, parents will still be paying almost the same amount in childcare a week than the government promised they would pay in a month. So still an awful long way to go. Interesting, actually, we talked about stuff being free or behind a paywall. The Champions League final Saturday, last Saturday, wasn't it? All the days mix up a little bit. It was last Saturday. It kicked off at 5, didn't it? Obviously, it was free to watch on RTE. It wasn't free to watch, actually, in Britain. It was behind the TNT paywall there. But even though people had access to watch it for free, they still chose to stream it online using IPTV. Now, I suspect people pick and choose their commentary teams, to be honest with you. There is one annoyance I have with RTE, and I think it is to favour the commentators, and that is there can be a delay. Well, all of the TV stations will have a slight delay so that the commentary feels completely up to date with what's happening on the pitch, so it doesn't feel like it's laggy or too responsive. RTE sometimes over-tweak that, and the commentators almost sound like they're predicting the future at times. It does annoy me, and it's annoyed me for many years. But anyway, Arsenal's loss in the Champions League final to Paris Saint-Germain attracted over 1.2 million views on illegal streams in Ireland, despite being free to air on RTE. The figures indicates the high usage and prevalence of dodgy boxes and illegal streaming services across the country, with a significant proportion of the population using them even when sports are available to view for free. Gaming Compliance International, a technology analyst, estimated there were 1.2 million views of 90 seconds or more through an illegal stream or dodgy box on Saturday's Champions League final. Out of interest, and I'm not judging anyone, and by the way, if you do have a Fire Stick, don't forget you can watch this show every day on YouTube on it, on your big TV if you're at home. But anyway, that's besides the point. Why would you choose to stream it rather than watch it on RTE? Not judging anyone. I'm not logging any IP addresses. I'm just curious as why so many people out there would choose that option over, especially considering the coverage might be a minute or two behind. The Irish Daily Mail, Enoch Burke, still filling the pages. Enoch Burke has received his last payslip after being formally sacked, the High Court has heard. However, he'll remain in prison after again refusing to promise to stay away from his former school. Now that he's not employed at all or not receiving any money whatsoever, it does ramp up continuing to go to school. It seems a little bit weird to me, but anyway. His case came under review by Judge Brian Cregan yesterday, with a typically argumentative Burke addressing the court via video link from Castlereagh Prison. Kate Kavanagh, barrister for the Department of Education, said Enoch Burke had been removed from the department's payroll on May 28th and had received his last payslip, yet he still continues to take up a jail cell in a prison cell in jail. The Irish Farmers Journal, big landowners who do no real farming activity other than throwing a few cattle or sheep or donkeys on large acreages, are in Fine Gael's firing line in the next cap. Fine Gael MEP for Ireland South, Sean Kelly, has fired the opening salvo in the debate around the definition of an active farmer. Kelly made the remarks at the launch of the party's report on the upcoming cap reforms. The report states that the stocking rate of land that would be eligible for direct payments should be examined. So they're saying there's too few animals on too much land, and they're going to have a look at that. SNA cuts, we talked about this extensively, and we focused an awful lot on some great concern in local schools. Thankfully, there was a stay of execution, if I could call it that, on SNAs, but the future might still see cuts. The Irish Daily Star reports that no school will lose more than one special needs assistant a year. Education Minister Hildegard Nocton has promised earlier this year. SNAs and parents of children with special needs were distressed when around 194 schools across the country and many in Donegal received letters stating they would lose SNAs. After a major uproar, the government did a major U-turn and said no school will lose SNA positions for the upcoming school year starting in September 26. This was backed by an additional €19 million in funding. While the U-turn was welcomed, SNAs feared the decision was being kicked down the road and cuts would eventually come in 2027. Is part of this too, though, that we need a clear and maybe redefined definition of the role of an SNA, or what an SNA is, or what qualifies a classroom for an SNA? Because I think that still appears to be the root cause of many of the issues. Now, if you were holding off on getting an EV, and it has to be said, you know, you get massive guarantees now on EV batteries. The range now is up where it probably needs to be, even in rural Ireland, to avoid that range anxiety and to have these cars whereby they feel like a good car. If you drive one, you know, it's very hard to go back to a petrol or diesel car, unless you like that roar and change in the gears. Of course, people will always like that. But in terms of, you know, torque and power and comfort and technology, it's hard to beat an EV. But a lot of people simply couldn't afford it. But maybe it's going to become more affordable, because you have to have an old petrol diesel car, but there are going to be big incentives to you to switch to EV. The government announced a major step to accelerate its transition to greener transport with a €10 million pilot scrappage scheme to replace the most polluted vehicles, targeting drivers of petrol and diesel cars older than 13 years, which is like 131. So, I mean, like a 131. You get yourself a nice 131 Audi A6. It's an absolutely beautiful car with all the modern spec, but it's not seen as such, or any other vehicle for that matter. You can scrap it. The initiative offers substantial financial incentives to make the switch to electric at the core of the first come first serve pilot starting July 1st is an €8,500 grant for eligible drivers. The figure comprises a €5,000 grant for scrapping the older polluted petrol diesel vehicle, an additional €3,500 towards the purchase of a brand new battery powered electric vehicle. So €8,500. It just like 131s. I mean, how many people are going to? I think there's a lot of 131s, you know, are worth around about €5,000 anyway, aren't they? Clean ones. Don't know. There's something seems a little bit amiss in relation to that. I like what they're doing. I think people, it should be more affordable for people. But it just seems a little bit, you know. Earlier this week, we got sight of the revised IS465 testing standard. There is a sense that it should significantly speed up the assessment process for affected homeowners. And we're going to tease this out now that we've all had an opportunity, I suppose, to reflect on it somewhat. Deputy Charles Ward, 100% Redress Party. Good morning to you. No, you're muted. I'll come back to you in a second. Councillor Martin McDermott, how are you?
Good morning, Greg.
Good to have you with us. Right, so as far as you are concerned, what was this announcement on Monday? What does it change? What's its implications?
Yeah, look, it's a major step forward, Greg, from a standard that we had. The IS465 2018, as we know, is something that we've been saying for quite some time that there had been an issue with. If we go back to 2020, the December of 2020, we would have had correspondence from our own local authority to the department at that stage with concerns that they had with applications that was being submitted to Donegal County Council. And that took about probably 9 months from that stage to about October, November of 2021 before we got the department to come back to us and acknowledge that, yes, there was, you know, internal sulphate attack from pyrite and pyrrhotite at that stage. And that slightly changed the mechanism at which the council would have looked at applications. But at the same time, it didn't change the standard that was there. And from that point on, I suppose there was a lot of work put on to try and get that standard changed by a lot of different organisations, a lot of different people. You know, we had Professor Dunlop on there a couple of days ago with Donna Marie, would have been heavily involved in some of that research as well. So it's definitely a major step forward for the scheme and for particularly for homeowners that have, and you know, particularly for downgraded homeowners and homeowners that were sort of stuck in the scheme. And they, again, are an organisation that put in a lot of work to
try and push this forward. But it took us years to get to this point. We've been talking about how the fact that how we were testing homes for over half a decade wasn't the right way of doing things. This new guidance, does this not potentially mean that we need to look at the scheme at a point whereby it delays everything? Is this not pressing the pause button on the defective concrete block scheme? Because I certainly wouldn't be taking a single step forward at this point, not knowing what's to come next.
Yeah, it certainly will trigger a review of the scheme. I think that legally there's going to have to be a review within 3 months of the new standard being announced. So the minister will have to do a review of the scheme. It's certainly, there's elements of the new standard that will have major implications on the scheme, and will there be elements of the scheme will definitely have to change to take into consideration some of what IS465
well, for an example,
now has put forward.
For an example, if we start routinely testing foundations now, there is no provision to replace foundations in the current scheme. How long does it take for enough information to come through from analysing the results from foundations for it to be determined that the scheme needs to be changed to include foundations? I mean, this could run on for years, could it? I don't want to be cynical or sceptical, but I mean,
no, but
this could run on for years.
No, the scheme will have to change to bring in the foundations into the scheme. That's something that will have to happen immediately as far as I'll be concerned. I suppose the department will take a few days now to digest and see how they move forward.
Can I just ask a question in relation to that, Martin? Are we sure that they're not going to look at the results of testing the foundations and then determine the potential deterioration of them or whether or not they should be changed at all. Does this, the fact that foundations are going to be included now, does that automatically trigger a change to the scheme that means they will have to finance the changing of foundations? Because it doesn't seem terribly clear to me that that's the case.
Yeah, well, I mean, that will be down to the minister to make that call, but I would be quite confident to say that I can't see how anyone could not tick what is in front of them at the minute. And I think that will definitely be a change within the scheme, that that when foundations are tested, and if they do come back with any level of deterioration, that the scheme will have to be able to take that on board, and will have to be able to, the person that, that gets those results will have to be able to go through the scheme. And if that means taking out the foundations, and as you know, Greg, that is not a part of the scheme as we speak. So that is something that will definitely have to change.
So you don't see any argument about it being more compressed or less open to water ingress, or you don't anticipate any counter arguments to that?
I don't think so, because if we look back at the IS 465 2018, that was all taken on board at that time by the minister. So I can see how we can just make a determination now and not when the evidence is there and the standard is in front of us.
Charles Waters, I mentioned, is with us. Charles, on Friday, I said to you, you know, what is the implications of this being released next week? Does it mean we sort of end up in a limbo until such time as we know precisely what might change? Break it down in the simplest terms for listeners from your perspective, what these changes mean.
Well, what the changes mean now is that we're going to be science-led, okay? But being science-led means we're still open to interpretations according to this document. So this document would say that we're leaning and putting more responsibility upon engineers, and the way in which this this scheme moves forward will be through science, but it will also be leaning towards engineers moving forward. And there is an issue with that moving forward, because we have a history of, within certain groups, particularly the downgraded homeowners, with unethical engineering. And that is fact.
What does that mean? What does that mean for those outside of the sort of the knowledge loop?
So what it means is that the testing will be done. It will be engineer-led. So, for example, it's how the evidence is interpreted. It's how the samples are taken and the future risk assessment going forward, and it has to be weighed up. So everything from how the samples are taken to how it's processed. And if there's ISA in this, then it's full demolition. But if there's issues within, then it goes back to the housing agency. And history in the past has shown that there has been serious questions to be asked regarding the housing agency. And
so how do we work through that then to establish a trust?
Well, what you have to do is, this now has to go into government, right? And everybody has to get behind this. And then we have to show the way for the government to look at this document now, to put it in place so that we have a pathway going forward, okay? So that the government realise that within this ISA, full demolition, there is no need for the housing agency to be sent, samples to be sent back to the housing agency if ISA is detected in the building. It should be full demolition and allow people to get on with their life. And it's and instead of this, where example for the downgraded homeowners, where they've been waiting years, which is a ridiculous scenario. If your house has internal soffit attack, it's full demolition, you move on. You know, and another example is people who have already progressed into the scheme, who put their foundation, done it by the rules, whose foundations are, whose homes are built on top of these foundations that that haven't been tested. This was in the scheme. That has to be addressed.
What does that mean? Because, you know, person B's house is tested today and it's found that you can't build a new house on these bad foundations, person A built their house 3 years ago on the same bad foundations, how do you address that?
They have a case to answer. There's a case within the state to answer here.
But what do you do? Are we suggesting that you toss the house again?
I'm suggesting that the government need to look at this and need to come up with a plan and a way forward in this, because at right now, as we speak, there is what's nearly 900 houses meant to be progressing through that. We've completed 300. What does that look like? What happens if you've had outer leaf remediation? What does that look like?
What do you believe it looks like?
Built on top of affected
farms. What do you think that means? Like, are you saying?
I think there's serious questions to be asked why this has been allowed to go like this.
No, I understand, Charles. But what I'm asking you as a legislator and as a representative of 100% redress, what does this mean? If people have a new house for 3 years, a new outer leaf, and they have the old crappy blocks on the internal walls, or in the rising walls or the foundations, what needs to be done for them? What does it mean for them? What would you like to see done for them?
For these specific cases going forward now that have rebuilt on top of foundations exist, there needs to be a generational, and I say generational, guarantee, not 40 years, because they've built a house now that they hope that can give on to their children.
Understood.
Going forward, that's 40 years, Greg. We can remember 40 years ago. We ain't not remember the next 40 years.
But that guarantee would have to be not just generational, it would have to be transferable too, or else people would be stuck.
It would have to be transferable. And this is where the devil is in the detail. As per usual, it is welcome news, but the devil is in the detail. And the history of the past, and we've seen what's happened in the past of these schemes going forward. If we do not look at every element of this and break it down and see where the pros and the cons are, then we're going and repeating history. And that's not what we're wanting to do.
Martin, what's your view on houses that have already been remediated, whereby internal walls remain or foundations, rising walls? I know people have different phrases for that, but what do you believe needs to be done for those people?
Well, the scheme does allow those people to come back and if there's any deterioration in the house. I mean, those families do have a 40-year state-backed guarantee that does allow them to come back in as the scheme stands at the moment.
Does that pass from parents to children or if you sell the house?
Yeah, that goes with the house. So it's not passed from person to person. It's on the home. So if you sold the home or passed the home on, it goes with that home. So that is there at the minute. And I think that, you know, we've I suppose been saying for lots of years now that we had issues with certain options from 2 to 5 in particular. And now I suppose that the standard at the minute will hopefully and alleviate a lot of that a lot of the houses now will be demolitions. But as there is a bit of work to do here,
does
Greg,
all
there's
houses
no question
not be,
about
are
that.
All, does this not really effectively say that all houses must be demolished and the foundations taken out?
Well, depending on what the result comes back at, but I mean, if we look at a lot of the applications that we would have at the minute, yes, 95-98% of them certainly will be, and that's a step forward. There's no question about that. But as I said, there is still work to be done to make sure that the standard ties into the scheme and that it's the best workable scheme for the homeowner that we can possibly do.
Charles, just I should have more faith, but I mean, we're talking about at this point for a relatively modest house, the scheme needing to be, you know, upwards of €500,000. Is that going to happen?
It's concerning. What's concerning to me,
like, if you think about it, you know, how much is it? An extra 70, 80 grand for foundations, theoretically. I mean, we're maybe heading towards 600 grand for a modest 3 or 4 bed house. Is that going to happen?
Well, Greg, I'll just give you an example. I'm in Drumkeen, okay? My neighbour's next door, less than 50 feet away. My foundations were 13 courses. When I built it, 13 courses, which is nearly just short of maybe 7.5 foot plus. My neighbour's over there with 4 courses. Now, the difference in my foundations to his will be significant. It'll be thousands upon thousands of euros. When you look at a house, always look at it. You look at the top end of it. You don't know what's underneath the ground. So foundations vary. You know, we've had one there in Milford we're dealing with at the moment that's 5 meters deep.
Wow.
So, you know, it's crazy stuff. And it's open to, you know, like, for example, if we're looking at this in an engineering point of view, you know, the engineer decides which parts of the house are sampled, whether the damage area is represented where it is represented and it's prioritised, and then the sample's taken, right? So that's on the engineer. But what we're saying is, you know, visual inspection, laboratory testing, petrographic testing, structural behaviour and foundations and professional judgment is all taken in. But it's an interpretation. You know what I mean? So where houses with ISA...
But just to correct... Sorry to cut across the... Were we not concerned in the past, when I say we, I mean, you know, the general discourse, that engineers were reluctant to do anything other than recommend full demolition because their reputation would be on the line if there were later deterioration? How did we shift from that to now questioning whether engineers would be thorough enough?
Well, look, listen, it's the history of the past will tell you. Engineers came out, look at the, particularly the downgraded homeowners, came out, give a determination, okay? Then a fellow engineer from the housing agency, who's in the same, you know, company as in the organisation Engineers Ireland, downgraded their work on a desktop study.
I understand. Yeah, sorry, you're on about different engineers, not engineers as all. Now we're discussing the new IS465 guidance, and there's other stuff in it that's more simple and really very positive, and we'll get to that in a moment. But Charles, you know, obviously none of us on this call want to in any way cause any further distress to people or for them to lose hope or whatever it might be. But just to give us a reality check, right? So say it's me, for an example, sitting there. I've had the visual on the house. It's been determined that I would qualify for the testing and potentially entering onto the scheme. What do I do now? Because I'm not sure, would it be external, internal, option one, two to five, a mix, or whether or not foundations might be included in a year or 2 years or however long that takes, or indeed if the scheme, you know, will need extra money in it. And so, you know, all of these kind of uncertainties. So speak to me as if I've called your constituency office and give me advice. Okay. What do I do?
Well, what I say to everybody is basically, we still have to proceed with this, okay? Yeah, everything has to be taken with a note of caution. But we have to keep going. You have to go in, get onto the scheme. Nobody's saying not to get onto the scheme. And the government now are going to have the responsibility of interpreting the standard and updating the scheme accordingly. But when I've got you here, Greg, you see, I need to emphasise what's going on with the foundations. See, IS 465 does not determine how pyrotite is in the founds. Also, it's not an estimate of future risk. So this is open to interpretation. You know what I mean? So where people are looking, thinking to themselves, oh, we're getting our founds. It's very much open to interpretation. And that's what the fear is going for. We need the government now to come in solid and go, well, there is a doubt within the foundations. They have to come out. Okay. It cannot be left
well,
to
just
the families.
On that, I did put that very same question to Martin McDermott about whether or not this could lead to a debate on you know, how well they might last or not. Martin, do you agree? You seem to suggest otherwise, that you're of the view that the minister would have to include the foundations.
I think the testing of foundations has to be included. There's no question about that. But I think we need to be careful that we don't panic people here either in relation to foundations, because, you know, even throughout the process of when tests were being done in relation to foundations, I can be corrected in this, but I having conversations with Professor Dunlop and different people throughout that process. There was very. I don't think they came on any ones that was below the levels of what they were in, what they should have been. But there's certainly the testing of foundations is something that we've been looking for quite some time. It's something that
will we not then, Martin, end up having a conversation about the, you know, how these elements behave within compressed sort of seven-layer concrete and versus a porous concrete block. That's the point. That's what I'm trying to get to.
And I think, Greg, there's two different tables and two different elements to how concrete at 30 Newton or 40 Newton, for instance, is determined versus a concrete block, which could 6 to 13 Newton. So there's two different tables that determines how both of those are surmised. So that will be part of the new standard, and that.
Yep. Charles, can you come back in on that? Because
yeah, I will. Yeah. So listen, If you break it down in simple terms, and I just go on what, like, I'm working very closely with Paul Dunlop on this. And what's been said from what Paul has examined is that if ISA is in the foundations and it's in its infancy, we would need years and years of testing. But there's an element of doubt there. And that element of doubt means that it's already present in the foundation, okay? Now, if it's present in the foundation, then that would be left up to the family to determine. That shouldn't be. Now, we can't tell how this will progress going forward.
But have you not seen Hughes Foundations?
I've seen Hughes Foundations. I've been up at Hughes. It's a disgrace.
Yeah, so is that not evidence that...
What this would tell you is that they will inspect the foundations and come up with a conclusion, looking upon the foundations, testing the foundations. But what we're saying is that if there's an ISA on them foundations comes in, the doubt is there and it has to be removed, 100% removed. Mm. And if it comes back where they say there's nothing there, then we move on.
Yeah, but there could be a conflicting scientific opinion that even if it's present, it might not present a problem into the future.
But look, let's take it in layman terms here, right? You look at an ISA in a building, it's a form of a terminal decline on the building. Just because the building is in terminal decline, underneath the building is buried. We don't know then what sets it off. Okay. Will it be set off when it's down to... There's an element of doubt that we cannot put onto families. So that's why, if in doubt, take it out.
Yeah, this is a texter that I was trying to articulate because this is what they say. I was given full demolition December 25. We haven't started yet. We're planning to start next year. What do we do now? Wait for updates? Get foundations tested ourselves? What do we do? And this is what I was saying to you last week, that for some people it feels like it's pressing the pause button. I'd be reluctant to move forward.
Of course, and you can see that there's a frustration there because everybody is in this boat. I'm in this boat. They're in the boat. Martin knows he's dealing with them. We're dealing with this. We're dealing with thousands of people who are waiting with bated breath on every single piece of documentation that comes out of the NSAI. And the fact of the matter is now it has to go to the government. And our job as politicians is to say to them, this is the way forward out of this. This is what we need to do. We need to recognise this. And that family that are waiting, the legislation now, you think the government will look at this and legislate for this properly and have a scheme that could actually work,
but we can
move out of this.
Martin, a call asked me to put this directly to you. I'm due to start my demolition. Do I hold off or wait?
Well, you see, Greg, I suppose if they're ready to start the demolition, the new standard does bring in the testing the foundations. But that, as I say, has to go through a process and there's no point in us sitting here today and saying that that's going to happen next week or the week after. This could be, you know, as Deputy Ward knows, it could be a month, it could be 2 months before this is ironed out. There's a lot of unanswered questions here. For somebody that's moving forward at the minute, if the foundations do come in to the scheme, there is quite a possibility that legislation will have to change to allow people to get paid for that. That could take...
Yeah, but
this
house will be built on the old foundations by then. Do they progress or not?
But I mean, asking me to answer that question is very unfair.
But no, it's not. Sorry, and if it's not, sorry, it's not intended to be unfair, Martin. It genuinely, I'm not. I'm just trying to ascertain. And your answer could be a shrug of the shoulders and say, "Listen, we simply don't know." I'm not trying to paint you into a corner on that. No, I'm just trying to... It's really what I was trying to do is that we're having the real conversation. Charles?
At this particular moment in time, Greg, the answer to that question is that we don't know how long it's going to take for the process to allow foundations to be tested, to allow if they're going to bring in extra costs that's going to allow people to claim for those foundations. That is all to be determined yet. That is all to be ironed out yet. So, I mean, someone that's ready to start tomorrow morning...
Would it not be helpful? It's so complicated because I was going to say, even if the government guaranteed some sort of a retrospective element to this, you could have your whole house already built on these old foundations. And exactly. What do you do? Charles, sorry, you wanted to come in there.
You see, foundations are important because the act as the present means of, if you rebuild, then you have to resource to replay. So, for example, if you're going onto the scheme and you're going to replace your foundations, right, that's going to be it's going to be at your cost now. We need to see what that looks like going forward. But can I just say, regarding that family who are moving forward in this, who are looking at this, if they had the financial means to get petrographic testing done, get it done. And if it allows, if ISA is present in the Founds, I would be waiting for the legislation to come in. But if it's not, then I would tell them to go forward.
The only problem with that is that's going to take a bit of time to get that done, and it knocks them back a bit. And again, I would say,
and their contractor could literally say, "I've got this window."
Yeah, and if I would also add to that, Charles, as if they did do that and they can prove that, you know, if they did take out the foundations and they spent X amount of money, they keep the proof of that, because if something changes, they can then get reimbursed for
potentially,
that.
Potentially,
if that happens. Okay. So if they are going to do that, I would ask, make sure that they do keep a record of that.
I'm going to let Councillor McDermott go because he's got another appointment. Thank you very much, Martin. Appreciate your time. Sorry, Charles, go ahead.
What I want to say regarding this is, when we look at this going forward, we look at this document, and that this is a framework now that we've got to build another scheme upon, okay? But the responsibility has to be within the government now to deliver on this. Mm-hmm. And Greg, my worry going forward is, this is a positive, it's a positive document going forward where we are following the science, and we have to thank Paul Dunlop and University of Ulster for what they've helped us with. If we didn't have them, the scheme wouldn't exist, as far as I'd be concerned. And I think that looking forward, I look at the past and I've looked at the way things have been done. And particularly if you look at within the council, you know, Frank McBurty has always said about the foundations and the cause of this. And going forward, Greg, the problems we have is this: they have to look at this now on an end-to-end basis, because the volume that we've got coming forward is massive.
I understand, but I have an accurate number. I know where you're going, and we need, you know, we probably do need Scheme 3.0 at this point, but there are lots of people right now. You'll see yourself windows coming out of houses, roofs coming off, and it's those that are having the real dilemma at the moment. As a legislator, the government has 3 months. We're going into the summer recess. If for foundations to be included, it's going to take legislative change. Now, we know how that works. It can happen in an instant. It can be dragged out. We can have pre-legislative scrutiny that can be bypassed. It took well over a year for IS465 review. How long is it going to take before we know what new scheme looks like?
Greg, I'll be pushing the government, as far as I'm concerned, to have this up and running before the end of the year. Now, I think it's very important that going forward, the volume is going to be massive. People are waiting. We all know everybody's been waiting for this document to be delivered. Now it's about interpretation, the government's interpretation of it, and making a scheme that works. That's what's important going forward.
Do you think that, what is the cap at the moment? 470, isn't it?
462 at the moment.
462, right.
But, I mean, at the moment,
we're probably looking at that having to be in excess of 500 grand. Do you seriously think the government can sell that to the general electorate?
Greg, it's as simple as this. There's going to be over 20,000 homes in Donegal affected with defective concrete. We have 38 homes to rent in Donegal. If 100 people go forward tomorrow, where do they stay? Where do they live? The government have to look at different options. They have to look at side by side. They have to look at everything you can do to get this scheme up and running, because if we do not build 1,300 houses every year for 15 years, we are not going to succeed with this scheme.
Thanks.
We need to ramp it up.
Yeah, and people in social housing looking on going, what about us?
2,400 in social housing waiting years.
Try to do side by side in that situation. All right, listen, I hope I tried to make it more clear. I think really what we've learned is that it is actually so complex that it's not going to be that easy just to break it all down. But I do appreciate your time in helping us do so, and Councillor Martin McDermott too. Thank you so much for all of your texts and comments coming in so far this morning. I will get to those in the in the second hour. We've got quite a lot to talk about as well. Again, thanks to Charles, thanks to Martin. I know sometimes it's you ask questions and there is no obvious answer, and that's fine too, of course. Not everyone's going to have all the answers. And I hope in some way it might have given you a little bit of certainty on, if you are affected, how to proceed, or maybe not. That's the complexity of this whole crisis, isn't it? Lots of reaction to some of the stuff we've been talking about this morning. I'll get to the DCB stuff, but we're also going to talk GEA. Just in relation to some of your comments coming in relation to the news that three big games are not going to be televised at all, including, of course, from our perspective, Donegal v Cork. In relation to GEA Plus not broadcasting the Donegal-Cork match next weekend, the Donegal diaspora is probably the biggest in the world. And for our relatives in Chicago, from Aaron Moore and further afield, what exactly are they paying big money for with their subscription when they can't see all the games? It's a joke. Another, very disappointed in the GEA and RTE not showing the game on TV. Makes you wonder, is it just because it's Donegal? What is our Minister of State for Sport in Donegal going to do about it? Nothing, but it's not just Donegal, of course. There are six counties affected. Another, it's ridiculous. Donegal Cork is neither on TV or being streamed. Just goes to show the attitudes towards Donegal from Dublin. Dublin not included either. Isn't that right, Oisin? Yeah. What we're paying the TV licence for? To watch repeats? At least we have Highland Radio to listen to. That's right. And we're going to remind you of that extensively. And as I said, sort of in an opinion piece at the start of the show, it feels to me like you could argue the GEA is subtly shifting the baseline of our outrage. So instead of us complaining like we did in previous seasons about paying money to watch a streamed match and older persons' access to it and our broadband infrastructure, instead of all that conversation, now here we are, we're almost begging them for the right for us to be able to pay to watch this game if it wouldn't ordinarily be on RTE. Oisin Kelly is our head of sport here at Highland Radio, and it does feel a bit strategic to me, the games that they've picked, Oisin. They say, some say it's about getting people through the turnstiles. You know, these games
there's sell out lots anyway. Of variables and lots of things that you can talk about, Greg. And I suppose the first thing is it's been highlighted here because obviously Donegal is one of the three games that they're not showing. So it's disappointing. As I think the main point is for those who are not home here, they can't see it. That diaspora, that worldwide connection with Donegal, they have no option to see it. And they, for the older generation as well, it's unfortunate for them, but we do know that this can happen at the start of every season. The GA Plus say they're going to stream X amount of games. There is games that are not going to be shown. And they have to pick what they feel they can get out there. So RT will have their contractual matches that they do. And then the GA Plus.
What do you believe the GA Plus's or RTE's reasoning is on which games to exclude?
Greg, listen, you can talk about population and different things they got. Now, the fact that Dublin's not included, like they're going to Cavan. The two All-Ireland finalists from last year, you think, right, should they not be big enough options, headliners, that you can include it? I think Donegal Cork's a very good game that you could put on TV, more so than Cavan Dublin, and more so than Kildare and Kerry. But they've made their choice. So they have. They've made their choice. How much is the whole revenue income from it, Greg, going to be part of it as well?
Well, you see, the reality, I mean, if you were looking for... This is why I believe it's conditioning us to really move towards a subscription model, because
that is the case, then why are they not putting them on? Them?
Well, that's exactly... because that's the point, you
throw
see.
Throw all the games on it.
No, because instead of us arguing... Yeah. About paying for games and why is our game not on free to air and why is our game on GA Plus? Instead of us having that conversation, now we're saying, geez, I wish we could pay for it. Yeah. So you pick the games, right, that you possibly could have made the most money from, and you put them, you don't televise them. And what it does is it normalizes. You say, well, I'll pay for it then because it's better than not watching it.
Which, we've had this discussion before. There's one way this is going. 10 years' time down the line. It's going to be like the NFL. It's going to be like these other big major sports. You can pick and watch whatever game you want. But you have to get your own infrastructure set up in the background first. And that's probably what they're looking at. They're finding their feet with it. Do they have enough of a team there in the background to do every single game in the All-Ireland series. There's not an RTE.
No, because there's other games as well.
There's other games as well. You have to factor in hurling. You have there's lots of other stuff going on as well. So there is. But it's very, very unfortunate for Donegal supporters, and indeed for Cork supporters. Let's factor in what they're thinking today, because they're not going to bring a big travelling crowd to Donegal. Will they bring 3,000-4,000? We'll be very lucky to see that many Cork people in Donegal that weekend. I might be wrong on that, but it will affect the crowd coming down the distance. Should they have been afforded the opportunity, since there is such, you're going from one end of the country to the other, that they can watch it on the television?
Again,
that's the other side
of
it.
In the next season, it makes the option of paying for it all the more desirable.
Let's look at the population of Cork. Like, how much money was going to be made off GAA Plus by putting that on a streaming service from Cork alone? Would it affect the number of Cork people who are heading this direction? One thing for sure is the tickets have just got hotter, so they have. So if people want to watch this game, they're going to go to it.
Stay there. Councillor Jack Murray, I don't know if you buy into my conspiracy theory, but what's your view on it? Obviously, you're not happy that the game's not on the telly.
No, I think it's absolutely disgraceful. Look, there was a lot of excitement when the draw was made. Everybody's looking forward to watching it, hopefully in person, but those who can't, on TV. And then that was followed by the disappointment that this game wouldn't be televised. And look, Oisín's touched on it there. It defies logic. Donegal were last year's All-Ireland finalists, were National League champions. Cork's a team on the up. It promises to be a fantastic game. And for the people of Cork, particularly, look, they're the furthest county in Ireland away from us. They're a hugely populated county. There's about 500,000 people there who'd be looking forward to the game, now completely excluded. As you said, look, we've Donegal people in the four corners of the world, bitterly disappointed. People who've paid for their subscription for the year are now unable to do it. The people in County Donegal who may be caring for children, caring for elderly people themselves, who simply can't get this game, watch this game. And I just think it's absolutely unacceptable. And it defies logic. And but reference the NFL. We're not the NFL. We're not the Premier League. The GAA is a community, grassroots organization organizing every parish on this island. We should be making it as accessible, encouraging as much engagement with the organization, and excluding so many people from this, just it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. And I think there should be some kind of transparency from GAA Plus and RTE.
Yeah, but you say we're not NFL. How far back do you have to go before there was one game on a Sunday afternoon live? Or, you know, so we've already transitioned to expect every single game that's being played to be televised. So we are, we are affecting the NFL because we've changed dramatically in a generation.
Yeah, and look, GAA Plus was thumped as this is the new solution to everything. This will make it more accessible and more people will get to watch the games. And then people sign up based on that promise that they pay their money for their annual subscription and they get hit with this news. One of the biggest games this weekend, probably the biggest game this weekend, won't be televised. It's just, it defies logic. I don't think there's been any response from GAA Plus to explain the thoughts.
I don't think you're going to get one either, Jack, to be honest, from them.
And it's just a disappointment. You can see it throughout the county. Like, I put a post on social media, and you can see just the outpouring of frustration. And friends texting me, friends in Canada, Australia, America. It makes me old father. I'll not be able to travel to this game, and he would never miss a Donegal game. And it's really, really frustrating. It's completely unacceptable.
You won't come down the rabbit hole with me that this is trying to condition us into paying for football, that we'd be happy that we get to watch it next season. You won't be putting a post up next season saying, oh, it's a disgrace, that game's an RT and not GA Plus. You'll be going, well, thank God it's on one of the two of them. Is this not part of the strategy? They've picked those games to sort of, you know, normalise the desire for pay-per-view.
I would fully buy into that conspiracy, Greg, to be honest. I think we're getting pushed more and more to get as much money out of loyal supporters. And it goes against the very ethos of the GAA, everything the GAA stands for. And it says, look, a grassroots volunteer organisation, our players aren't even getting paid, but yet fans are going to be trying to drip every cent out of their pockets. And it just goes against everything that organisation was founded for. And I think it really needs to be stopped.
All right, listen, thanks very much, Councillor Jack Murray, as you say.
How do you stop it, Greg?
Well, you don't. You can't, because as I said earlier on, I can't remember off the top of my head, but there was, one game on a Sunday in the past, yeah, you know, maybe a hurling, you know, so we've this abundance now of riches now.
There still is more games available to watch now than there has ever been before, but it's the fact that the Donegal one is not included in that scenario that is really annoying to Donegal supporters.
Listen,
who can't make it to McCool Park. And I'm still thinking of the Cork people. So yeah, I know I'm a Donegal man, and you want to go to the game and you want it televised, and you want our entire Donegal connection worldwide to be able to watch this fixture.
But again, 10 years
but that's
ago,
not there. But
10 years ago, this game wouldn't have been.
Yeah,
on the TV
we're trying to get an argument for why they should stream it or why they should televise it. And the Cork people, like, there's a bigger population in Cork. So there is, and the fact
maybe
that the games
get
at the other
on from the radio station down there and see what they think, Caroline. Oisin, the reality is though this is what I do. Even though sometimes it can be a little bit of a challenge, but I've overcome that challenge. Is I want to hear the local commentary because you cannot beat that, and I will time the radio stream to coincide with the TV stream. Now, the one thing, the ever present, that's always there is our build up. Our full match commentary and unrivaled reaction as well. And you know what? In this day and age, it's great to have the good old reliable radio. And this, like all Donegal games, will be live on Highland Radio, of course.
Yeah, we will have extensive coverage, as we do from each and every game, Greg. There is a 3 o'clock start for it. It is early, and obviously it's to do with Cork situation and travelling. But we'll be live from 2:30, we'll have the build-up from Ballybuffet, and then the full game live along with the two Brendans, Mr. Devaney and Mr. Kilcoyne, and we'll have after-match reaction for you as well. So you won't miss a thing from that game. Stick on Highland, be it in the radio, be it in your phone, be it in your smart speaker, wherever you get Highland, whatever part of the world, because it's not just local here that it's on FM.
You'll get
us worldwide. And when we go away to different events and people come home for holidays, they always talk about the Highland connection that they have, particularly for the football when they're away from home. So listen, tune into Highland whatever way you get it.
How are the tickets being divvied out? I mean, I presume season ticket holders are getting first dibs, right?
They got an email yesterday.
But they're not going through the clubs at this point.
There's going to be the situation with the All Ireland series is if you have a season ticket, you're entitled to a ticket. You would have got an email yesterday with a specific link for season ticket holders to go purchase them from today at 12 o'clock. Okay. At the same time, there's going to be no stand tickets on general sale because it's the season ticket holders, my understanding, that are going to get first go at
same
it.
Same again, yeah.
There's then the general sale for terrace tickets will also go on sale today from 12 noon. So it's on GAA, on Ticketmaster, or you can call into Centres or Supervalues. Now, there is a small allocation, I understand, going to clubs that will include seat tickets, so it is. But it's very, very small, and obviously there is members from clubs who would require a seat that can't go to the terrace.
And this is probably hypothetical, but it could be 500 or 600 tickets. If Cork season ticket holders, because of the distance and the day it's on, etc., they don't take up their allocation, do they get re-released back to?
Oh, they
general?
Do. Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
oh,
but
yeah.
That's down the line.
That's down the line. But I don't know what Cork's stance is on season tickets. See, some counties have went over the top in season tickets. Some counties haven't bothered about it at all. Yeah. Donegal have had a huge uptick. I think it's 3,500 or 3,200, something
now,
like that.
One other question: the pitch. How big of a difference does this new surface make to Donegal? Because you know there'd be a great deal of familiarity with every hump and bump and what have you. It has been recovered. This is the first big game on it, right? It's been relayed. The players are used to a certain bounce. They're used to how the ball travels, how it skips, etc. When you're at that level, you're going to know. Does that make a difference?
I don't think so, Greg.
I think
you're all into your conspiracy theories and stuff.
No, listen,
the Donegal, I presume, will train on it. So they will before they play a game on it. Like they'll have to familiarise themselves with it. We understand that the pitch is in good condition and it's up for taking a game of this level. Like the grass is on the pitch. There is grass there, Greg. So there is, and it's in good condition and it's going to be playable. So and it is the home of Donegal, and you want to see a big championship game over in Ballybuffet. So we wait to see. But you would expect Jim McGuinness and his team would at least do one training session on it. Just to get themselves familiarised with it. But it's in pristine condition.
I've seen these newly laid pitches get very slippy and cut up. I hope this one's ready.
We are being told it's ready. That's all we can say. We've been told it's ready for it. So Listen, fingers crossed that it's a good enough day for Donegal and we progress straight through. Remember, Greg, you'll go to the quarterfinals. You'll get, not that you'll get a rest week, but you'll get a bye week from playing a match, and you'll go straight into the quarterfinals if you win on that Saturday afternoon. And again, it's on the radio. We're very disappointed it's not been streamed or on the television. There's no visual coverage of it, but you will get everything right here on Highland, on FM, or wherever you listen to the Highland.
Councillor Murray called back. He says, fair play to Highland, who as always will be there providing coverage of Donegal. For supporters who can't make it to Ballybofey, their match coverage is a lifeline. Whether people are at home, abroad, working, or simply unable to travel, Highland keeps the people of Donegal connected to the game. Of course we do.
It's funny, Greg, the last game, I might be wrong on this, but I think the last game that was not covered with any television coverage may possibly have been a Cork game as well. We were down in Cork and there was no TV coverage or no streaming coverage of it. Now, that day down in Cork turned out not to be a good day.
I think you're right.
But I know that Aidan Murphy covered for Kieran that day here, and Aidan couldn't believe the response worldwide from the messages coming in, because we put it out there, let us know where you're listening to Highland from today. And it was phenomenal, the response that he got. He was totally blown away with it on a Saturday afternoon. By the amount of people that text in from various different parts of the world to say that they were tuned in.
All right, yep. Good luck to you. Thank you so very much for calling down for that chat.
Okay.
Well done to you. When is that game again? It's
Saturday,
Saturday week, isn't it? Right, okay.
The 13th. Yeah, we'll have to wish the Miners all the best, Greg, this weekend. They have an All-Ireland semi-final on Saturday. They're playing down.
Do it on the score tonight. Yeah. No, I'm only joking. Right. It's a joke. Relax.
Yeah.
Ever since you won that Sports Personality of the Year award, you've lost around yourself. Yeah, I do. But I have to say happy birthday first to Emma, because Emma O'Bonner is celebrating her 13th birthday. And Sam O'Donnell celebrating his 10th birthday. Happy birthday, guys. Lots of love from Auntie Nora. You're off school, I take it, which is great. We'll see more of those requests, I presume, over the course of the summer. Happy birthday to Dad, Tommy Piper. He's in Letterkenny. Tommy is 86 today. A big happy birthday, Tommy, from the Greg Hughes Show and us, all of us here in Highland Radio, but also from Sandra, Marcel and Emmett. And if you're interested, that was sent from an iPhone. Caller says, agree with Gregory, radio coverage. Donegal play better on the radio anyway. No TV guarantees 17,000 attendance with a few hundred up from West Cork. Cork's main interest is the Munster Hurling final next Sunday. Look out for the huge wall of red next Sunday in Páirc Uí Chaoimh versus Limerick. Why have Cork home advantage for final? Should be in Thurles, the home of hurling. Where do the quarterfinals take place? Is it Croke Park? I'm not sure that they'd put all of those games. Would they put all of those games in that venue? Let's see. I'll ask Oisin. Let me see. Our vision is a sustainable community-based and volunteer-led association where as many as possible participate in Gaelic games and culture for as long as possible. So how can the loyal supporters participate in the GEA when they can't see the game because it's not being shown, or they can't afford to see this amateur community grassroots game unless they go to a pub or have a dodgy box? Well, in any of those scenarios, you won't be able to watch Donegal v Cork because there's no live stream of it. The poor people from Cork, it is a huge population and they would have to travel up to 6 hours to Donegal to watch it when it's not on TV. Another, people should object for paying for the GEA. If nobody pays, they'll put it back on again. I just listen to the radio now. The thing is again, I'll reflect, go back 10 years to how many live games there were at the weekend. If you want to go back to that, you know, I'm sure people can. This is a new era. RTE cannot show and will not show all of those games. You don't get any terrestrial TV service that would do that. Maybe they could have launched a satellite channel or a Freeview channel, I don't know. But anyway, it's where we're at. Good morning, Greg. Thank God for Oisin and the two Brendans. They never let us down. They always give us full coverage. Keep up the great work, Highland Radio. And we wanted to, I mean, listen, of course, we're very passionate about our sports coverage here, but we don't want to use every opportunity to talk about an interest to push ourselves. But that is the truth. We are here. We'll always be here broadcasting the Donegal games for you for free wherever you are. Morning, Greg. I'd be watching Champions League football on RTE when you have expert pundits like Richie Sadlier and Kenny Cunningham talking about Champions League players when they couldn't lace their boots. Richie is a know-it-all about everything in football, which is surprising, seeing as he didn't have an amazing career himself. People in glass houses. Okay. Right, defective blocks, we talked about that. Report important to remember, Martin McDermott, that only three foundations were included in the research. Did you see Hugh Gallagher's home? I referenced Hugh's home. In fact, I bumped into Hugh outside Lidl there not so long ago, so it was nice to meet him in person. Charles Ward is right about the engineers. They must put the homeowner first and leave no risk at the door. We are going through the process of rebuilding, says a listener. When the full demolition takes place, there's a process that has to be done in a week or a week and a half, and all the stuff is disposed of properly. Some run a digger through it one day to get rid of everything. You get charged more to do the proper process that takes a week and a half when the installation and everything is disposed of. Are there checks done on which process you use? Well, I presume one is the legal one. What percentage of mica is now considered red safe if no pyrite present? Null. Well, that's I didn't get to talk about that because what we need as well is some certainty in the housing market in Donegal. You'll still see people referring to mica houses, the mica crisis and all that type of stuff. And what it means is people with mica in their homes, and it's not going to add to the deterioration of their blocks, are finding that they can't shift their houses. So we need to get that absolutely clarified. For years, many homeowners found themselves trapped in a stressful loop. An independent engineer would recommend full demolition, but the housing agency's engineers would downgrade the option to a cheaper partial fix. We know that in 10 years' time, those families are back at square one. The argument being is that they can re-enter the scheme, or that the sort of cheaper options will no longer be sort of the future. Another, if you buy blocks from a company here in the Republic of Ireland, there's a levy so that there is insurance if defective blocks happen again. I'm not sure that's what the levy's for. But the caller says there's nothing in Northern Ireland to help with remediation. If this happens again, can the Irish government put a stop to people buying blocks from the north so that there's nobody left not covered if this would happen again? Again, I'm not sure that's what the levy's for. Let me double check that because I could be wrong. I'm due to start my demolition. Do I hold off or wait? I don't know. You know, that's it. That's the catch 22. Can you ask Charles about government review timelines? Do they have to start the review of the scheme within 3 months, or does the legislation have to be in at 3 months? So just clarification on what is the latest date for the new scheme legislation. Well, there's a 3 month review in terms of the legislation being passed. How long will that take? I just don't want to be negative. I just anticipate an awful lot of debate. And I think when the inevitable ceiling increases, I think there's going to be quite a bit of pushback in the Dáil, maybe, certainly amongst the people. I just have my concerns. Charles Ward, who's an opposition TD, said he hopes that it should be done before the end of the year. I know he's probably being a little bit optimistic in that. I think there's an awful lot to play out in this. I really do. But we'll see. Hi, Greg. Great show as usual. Thank you. I really appreciate that. I was given full demolition. Oh, sorry, I read that. They wanted to know, did he wait or get the foundations tested? Greg, can you ask Councillor McDermott if there is now going to be a push on the DCB scheme for a complete end-to-end 100% redress and put a stop to the outrageous price builders are charging and making some of us unable to proceed as the shortfall is ridiculous? The contractors are at a premium. They can... There's a lot of building going on between, the vacant property grants. Now we're going to have above shop grants that's going to see more activity there. There seems to be, certainly on my way to work, there seems to be a new building on every corner. Plus then throw in the tens of thousands of DCB homes. If you're in the contracting business, you know, you can name your price. We heard from someone yesterday that got a number of quotes, and it's clear some contractors are pricing themselves out of it because they're so busy, and others are more competitive. Price around is what I would suggest. Last one before a break, the new IS465. Who will oversee the housing agency? They're still ultimately responsible for the final decision made going forward. And look at the downgraded. They tried from 24 to highlight directly that their decisions were legally and scientifically flawed decisions made by the state body responsible for implementing the scheme. All being annulled, families treated horrendously, still dozens in limbo, but progress being made there. Maybe this will prevent that type of activity again if really we're moving towards a situation where we won't see any option other than full demolition, and the question mark then would be whether or not foundations are included or not. Last one, just a random one before the break. Greg, my husband talks a lot in his sleep, a lot of mumbling, and it's driving me crazy. Any advice? So it's not snoring, they just talk a lot and they mumble a lot, but it's driving the other half crazy. Any advice? 086 60 25,000. Welcome back to the programme, and I'm delighted to welcome onto it now Pauline McDonough, Circular Economy Coordinator at My Waste. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us today. National Food Waste Recycling Week is running until June 7th. And it's about really the use of brown bins, how we use our brown bins. I suppose if we're making the effort, we want to make sure we're doing it right, don't we?
Exactly. And it is the fifth year of National Food Waste Recycling Week. And the really good news, Greg, is 5 years ago when I was on the radio promoting the week, the questions were really, when am I getting my brown bin? Mm. I don't have the service. When am I getting it? Now, over 90% of households across Ireland, whether they're urban, rural, apartments, all have access to the service. So as you said, it's about brushing up on our skills and making sure that we're doing it right.
I suppose with the big bins or whatever size you might use, we're kind of conditioned on. I don't think I've ever put down a half empty big bin, even though it's sort of weight related. You kind of, by default, I think most people let them fill up. We shouldn't necessarily treat brown bins the same. Is that correct?
That's correct, Greg. And this is really interesting. And it only came to light this year for us when we were researching and looking at the data on how people present their bins. So it is our natural, I suppose, way of doing things is to place the bin at the curbside for collection when it's full. But the problem with food waste is that it's full of nutrients, and the nutrients are what we're looking for to either make compost or to anaerobically digest and make a gas and make green electricity. But we're losing nutrients if the food waste becomes old. Mm. And because we have a wheeled bin in a lot of cases, most people, especially in the wintertime, when we don't have garden clippings and we don't have grass going in there, we might have one sad little bag of food waste at the bottom, and we think we'll put it out the next time the bin man is coming along. But what we actually need people to do is to present their brown bin every time they're requested to. Now, everyone's system is different. You know, some people have a weekly collection for food waste. Other people have a fortnightly. But whatever your bin company is asking you to do, we would appreciate it if you can present at that opportunity.
You talked about the quality, it is the quality of the waste and what it can be used for, right? So is there also an issue in terms of the overall cleanliness of the bin? In other words, that it's not riddled with a bacteria that might fasten the deterioration of that food?
Yeah, and I suppose it's about how comfortable we feel with separating food waste as well. Mm. Like if we're presenting our food waste regularly, well, then the compostable bag generally won't have broken down. So the food waste is still intact in that liner, and therefore your bin is remaining cleaner. Because there is, you know,
it's okay to use that. It's okay to line the bin, is it, Pauline?
Absolutely. Okay. So what we ask people to do is to make sure that you're using a compostable liner, 100% compostable. Now, these are available in every supermarket, in hardware stores, in DIY stores. You look out, there's a little seedling logo on it, and they normally will be printed 100% compostable. Now, because they're made from an organic material, they do deteriorate, but not generally within, you know, a 6 or 8 week period. So they are robust enough to maintain the integrity of the bag before the bin is collected.
Do you find that, for instance, if someone has a packet of sausages that go out of date, or a tray of chicken, that they tend to throw the packaging and everything in, which obviously I presume you discourage?
Absolutely. So the food should be presented without the packaging. Now, in general, most people are very good, okay, but there's just a few things that trick us. And it can be around the yuck factor again. Like if we take, for example, you mentioned sausages. Well, generally, they, you know, it's easy to decant them from the packet that they're in. Mm. But if it's more something like the tub of hummus or coleslaw that's sitting at the back of the fridge and that's gone green, and it's all gloopy and you're looking at it going, oh, God, and you want to throw the whole thing into the bin. So, no, we can't put plastic. And the three things that we find are plastic, glass and metal. And it's all to do with the food packaging. Mm. So a good trick is either use kitchen roll or a kitchen spatula to just help you decant the food. And then you can rinse out, clean the packaging, leave it on the draining board to dry and then pop it into your recycling bin.
All right. I think we've hit on some of the big issues. People can go to mywaste.ie for more comprehensive, practical information, including FAQs, tips, etc. A lot of what we've covered already, Pauline. But if you go into the effort, you might as well just go the whole blooming mile. All right, Pauline, thank you.
Couldn't agree more. Thank you so much, Greg. Thank
Pauline
you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Circular Economy Coordinator at mywaste.ie. On defective blocks, Aquila says many families don't realise the proper disposal of the blocks are on the family, not the contract. I presume you engage with the contractor on that, though, don't you? Another problem, when you sell your house in the future, can you get a mortgage on it? Well, see this 40-year guarantee that someone might get. And then I say, well, did you change the foundations or did you change the internal walls? I wouldn't buy it in the first place, to be honest with you. Should I say that? I don't know. It's the biggest investment you will ever make. Will a bank back you on that? I don't know. Has that been tested? Another, where is the cost for this scheme going to end? It's going to be multiple of billions. No one questioned no one even knows how much has been spent on remediating the issues on the East Coast with pyrite. So why should we worry about that? It's not our fault. Huge thanks to Professor Paul Dunlop, a legend who looked beyond his own home and whose research will help thousands. Another, how can we be sure that the blocks being used now are up to standards? Well, I've noticed quite a few houses using alternative building methods. Whether it's down to that or not, I can't say.
Business Matters is brought to you by Print Supplies. Based in Frosses, Print Supplies has 21 years experience delivering managed print solutions that save you time and money. With remote monitoring and local hands-on support, they take the hassle out of printers and photocopiers. Email sales@printsupplies.ie to find out more.
Now, despite popular demand, he's back. Good morning, Chris. How are you getting on?
Good morning, Greg Hughes.
We're catching up on some business news and looking forward to the Business Matters podcast, which is released today. Let's start with some news. And I don't know if there's more money about Chris or we're just borrowing ourselves into a recession. But anyway, lots of people digging deep for new cars.
Yes, electric cars, not cheap, but nationally, the number of new electric cars registered in May was 115% up on the same month last year. Mm. Here in Donegal, also, just to give you a breakdown of the local figures, new electric car registrations in Donegal for the first 5 months of the year were 291 units, so that's up from 188 for the same month in 2025.
And they're full electric, right?
Now, this is where it's not quite, no.
Okay.
Now, that's a 54% increase. Now, I've got a breakdown here for Donegal. Petrol electric hybrids were 33%.
So that's people towing around very heavy batteries with a 1 litre engine. Yeah. Continue.
Pure electric was 16%.
Really, 16? All jokes aside, I'm actually really surprised. Is that low?
Petrol plug-in hybrids, 13%, and then diesel electric, 3.95%. But the interesting thing really is that more than half of the new registrations are electric in some shape or form. And we continue to see...
I think people need to, you know, make sure that the car suits their needs in terms of how they travel. Firstly, look at the car. You know, I think some people want the ICE engine as backup because of range anxiety, but, you know, really, it's not that complicated. Some of the cars have over 500k kilometres, real world range.
The range
can be quite quick. You know, I think people there are sort of hedging their bets, And, you know, maybe they need to market these cars a little bit better now at this point and focus on people's anxieties and alleviating those anxieties or relieving them, Chris.
Yeah, range is one thing. And then also now you see a lot of the newer ones that the actual time to take to charge them, you can get the quick charge, is actually getting a lot quicker. So that's a factor as well. Just also to let people know, the leading brands in Donegal so far this year, Kia topping the list here in the county, 18%. Nearly a fifth, nearly one in five, followed by Toyota, 14%, Skoda, 9%, Volkswagen, 8%, and Hyundai, 7%.
I don't think that top five is going to change for a long time, because they're just the bread and butter,
the big ones,
up
yeah,
here. Yeah,
yeah,
okay, interesting. Yeah. Right, let's do the preview of the pod and then come back to more news, because I want to make sure that everyone knows what's coming up. Who's your guest this week?
Right, two guests this week. First up, Letterkenny man John Logue. Now, he is the CEO of Social Enterprises Republic of Ireland. Now, they represent more than 4,300 social enterprises around the country. Interestingly, he's just been appointed to the government's Small and Medium Enterprises Advisory Group. So, essentially, he's going to be a voice at the table advising government to help social enterprises. And we have a clip here about him, and he's talking about social enterprises, where very much the focus is on getting a social return being the driving force rather than pure profit.
A lot of people know social enterprises, but they may not know them by that term. So the example I always use is your local community centre. So that organisation was set up for a social purpose first, not for profit. So a group of people would have got together and said a particular community needs a facility to have events and activities. The market hadn't solved that problem itself, nor had the state. And so this third type of organisation called a social enterprise stepped in to do that. And effectively, at a high level, a social enterprise is a business that prioritises social impact over profit, and it reinvests any profits that it does make back into that social mission. So it's things like community centres. You can have day centres that are social enterprises, community childcare facilities. We see a lot of community cafes now where maybe, you know, there isn't enough profit in a local area to have a private cafe run. A credit union is a social enterprise. Your local enterprise hub can be a social enterprise.
Yeah, India Kennedy was on with us last Friday week, speaking to us from Brussels, which was a bit of a forewarning to this bit of news, Chris, I imagine.
Yes, indeed. India Kennedy from Donegal Town, she's taken up a role as executive assistant to the CEO of the Irish Fish Processors Organisation, the CEO, E. O'Donnell. So India is going to be based in Brussels and will be supporting this Killybegs-based organisation, but it represents processors all over the country, and a new role for her. She's very enthusiastic about it, and she's been telling me, you'll hear it in the Business Matters this week, all about her new role, what it entails, and of course trying to get a better return for the fishing sector and the lobbying that goes on both here and in Brussels. And not easy, and we are a small fish in a big pond.
Yeah, doesn't help when you give all your fish away, though.
Yeah. You know that there is so much potential out there, and well, we are an island nation.
I mean,
you can't
go out and catch pollock anymore, hardly, or mackerel, because the big ships are all right. Donegal Women in Business event. It's their summer event taking place, Chris.
Yes, they have a summer event coming up now. It's next Thursday. That's the 11th of June, 6 to 8 o'clock in Castlegrove House Hotel in Letterkenny. Now, the keynote speaker is Karen Dwyer, the MS to Success founder. She's a great personal story, sharing her story of resilience and branding and leadership and making bold decisions through adversity. And also, at the event, there'll be a number of people from the No Limits Ladies, a little network that's been set up, and they are all now in business together, and that is on next Thursday.
Thank you, Chris. The podcast available for you later today, and you can listen back on Sunday just after the 6 o'clock news, and email Chris.
businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
We had a caller who was asking what they can do. Their other half is, he's talking all the time in his sleep and mumbling. And a texter says, Greg, that's the only time that man gets a chance to talk. Right, okay, back tomorrow morning at 9. Have a great Thursday, everyone.